Blog Talk Radio.
Paperback Writer.
This is the Writer's Lounge, where we showcase new authors. This is show number 127. It is November 14th, 2022. I am your host, Tom Riddell, and co-host Terry Brown will be with us shortly. A brief intro to today's show. Today we have returning author Rob Sanborn with us and his latest novel, Painter of the Damned. Got that wrong there. Anyways, Rob will be here about 15 minutes after the hour, and this is more about us. Here's where you can find us out there. Find us on Facebook, The Writer's Lounge, showcasing new authors. Find the book reviews of all of our current shows over at thomasriddell.net. That's thomasriddell.net. In the blog section and the on-demand radio shows can be found there on the podcast page as well. Or go over to the Blog Talk Radio site and search for The Writer's Lounge. Find me on Twitter at TomRiddell56. And our email is writerslounge2020@yahoo.com. If you want to be a guest on a show and have your book reviewed, put guest request in the subject line and we will get back to you. A special note, we can now also be heard on your Alexa device. Subscribe to Apple Podcasts and ask her to play The Writer's Lounge, showcasing new authors. I'd also like to put in a plug for Goodreads and Readsy Discovery. They both do a great deal to help authors and readers alike, and I also review books on both sites as well. And upcoming authors on The Writer's Lounge, 2 weeks from tonight on November 28th, 2022, author David Tuno will be here with his book, Intrepid Spirit. A love of a history and a good entertaining fictional tale, Intrepid Spirit delivered beyond what I could have imagined. This is a story that involves one of the most celebrated warships in American history. That would be the USS Constitution, or better known as Old Ironsides. Also on November 28th, we will announce the six nominees for the Writer's Lounge 2022 Bookshelf Awards. These will be posted on our Facebook page and announced on our broadcast. I'll explain the qualifications during our writer's topic segment in a few minutes. On December 12, 2022, Writer's Lounge 2022 Bookshelf Awards show. We will present the six books that were nominated, and we will announce the winner. The title and the author will have the honor of sitting on the Writer's Lounge top shelf for the next 12 months. Hope you'll tune in to these exciting upcoming shows. And the next segment on the Writer's Lounge is Writer's Topics. And this is where I introduce my wonderful co-host, Terry Brown. And I will open the door to the lounge and let her in right now. Here she comes strutting over, very excited.
Hi, Tom. How are you today?
I'm pretty good. How are you doing?
I am doing well. I just got back from a week-long vacation, so I'm feeling rested at the moment.
Very good. And you've been avoiding the hurricanes, I hope?
Yeah, well, there's always a hurricane when I go on vacation. We've just come to expect it.
Yeah. I got to put in a special note here. I started doing this reboot of the Writer's Lounge in December of 2020. And on my first show, we had an author on. His name is Nunes, Matthew Nunes. And he has been a friend and stayed in touch with me throughout the time, as most people do on Facebook. And he, unfortunately, was caught in the hurricane down in Florida. He lived aboard his sailing boat, and was upended and slammed against the dock where it broke in half, and all of his possessions went to the bottom of there. And so he basically lost everything. He was able to escape with his life just barely before that happened. It was like 3 a.m. in the morning when the hurricane made landfall there. And so anyways, I'd like to put out a shout out to him, Matthew. I know that you're recovering well, and God bless you. And let's get you back sailing again, because I know how much you love doing it. He took people out on his boat all the time, and he would post about it. And it was just so wonderful to, read about his excitement down there and doing what he was doing for his friends and neighbors down there in Florida. So I hope you recover, Matthew, and we're always thinking about you here, and God bless you again. So anyways, Terry, glad you didn't get into any trouble like Matthew did.
No. Things are pretty calm around here. A little bit of rain, a little bit of wind, but nothing too crazy.
Uh-huh. And so what's your topic for this week?
So I thought that, being that it's November and it's National Novel Writing Month, or NaNoWriMo, that it might be a good thing to talk about, because I know a lot of writers participate in it. Have you ever done it?
I haven't done it, but I did a little research on it, and they've actually got a web page.
Quite the
organization from what I found out about it. And they also host, it's called the Young Writers Program, where I think that's a wonderful thing for writers who happen to be in their teens and early 20s. And it's really great that they can have that. But go ahead and tell me what you had told me a little bit about it before we got on air about your pros and cons of.
So the listeners know that the NaNoWriMo, the whole goal is for authors to write 50,000 words in the month of November. Well, in order to write 50,000 words, that averages to 1,667 words per day. And so, what's the good and the bad? Well, I've participated in it. This is my fourth time. Two times I've finished 50,000 words. One time I did not, And this time is yet to be seen because we're only halfway through the month. So I was kind of looking at, well, like, what's good about it and what's not so good about it? And for me, the good points, it kind of, you know, it's got that goal, so you know what you're trying to accomplish for the month. And this time it's gotten me started on a project that I've been procrastinating a little bit. Like, I knew I needed to get started, but I just didn't have whatever it took to get started. But November the 1st, I sat down and began writing. You can form writing partnerships so that you can have different people. I've got four different people that are checking in on me, and we kind of like keep up with one another. And if we see someone hasn't written in a day or two, we reach out and, you know, check on them. You can get a lot of encouragement. You can have bragging rights if you finish. You can even purchase some of their swag, and all of that's really a lot of fun. The bad part, and I don't know that this is true for everyone, but it is for me, is that excess pressure to perform, because for me, it's impossible to write every single day. I can't. Usually, I mean, it's not that I don't have words, but it's usually I have other things that are going on that are keeping me from being able to write every. So if you're not writing every single day, then I almost feel like a failure. Or if I don't get my 1,667 words in a particular day, then I can feel like a failure. And then the other thing that worries me is, am I writing so fast that what's coming out isn't going to be worth anything? And you have to kind of make sure that what you're writing, you know, is the word goal more important than the real goal? And the real goal is having a finished work that you can then, you know, push on towards being published. So, yeah, I just kind of go back and forth between what's good about it and what's bad about it. So this year, in my mind, I've decided that my goal is to get to 50,000 words, but if I don't and I've made good progress on my work in progress, then I'm going to count it as a win and move on.
Mm-hmm. I also think that quality should matter more than quantity. And so,
yes,
you know, you could push out quantity really easy by just letting it all flow out there onto the page. But in order for it to be anything that's worthy of the time that you're spending, I would think that you would want the quality of it to be there too.
Right. And so that's kind of the edge there, is when you're pushing yourself hard enough to write, you know, we're going to just say 1,700 words a day. If you're pushing to write that and that becomes the goal, are you writing words that you're going to care about, or are you just pumping crap out onto the page? And so, you know,
right,
you have to kind of, why, in my mind, yes, it's a great goal, I'm going to try for it, but if I don't make it, what really counts is have I made good strides on this next work in progress of mine? And if the answer is yes, then I'm going to count myself a winner. So,
yeah, after all, 50,000 words is half a novel, and a lot of writers take a couple of months to get through a novel. It took me several years because, like you, I don't discipline myself every day to sit down. I sort of sit down when inspiration grabs me to sit down to write. So I don't know if that would work well with me, but I get the idea behind it. It does get
you into writing, and it does
get you into a community of writers where you can bounce ideas off from each other. So that's also a very positive thing there, I think, too.
Right.
Yeah. So anyway, the main event today, guest author intro and interview portion of our show, and that would be to introduce Rob Sanborn, and he has written number two in his series called Painter of the Damned. And I want to remind everybody out there, if you're live listening, you can call in to talk to Rob, or you can talk to Tom and Terry if you'd like to. You can call in at area code 914-219-0868. Once again, that's area code 914-219-0868. In my review of Painter of the Damned, in the second novel of the series, Nick and Julie O'Connor are hoping to return home from their vacation in Venice, which has been nothing less than a nightmare. Nick is trying desperately to rid his mind and his desires for a 16th century soulmate who is entombed in a Tintoretto painting. It is a purgatory for thousands of other souls. The painting, titled Paradise, is controlled by Salvatore della Porta, a corrupt head of an ancient enigmatic order. Nick and Julie are en route to the American consulate, where they are detained by Interpol, and Salvatore della Porta is behind it all. Salvatore believes that Nick, in a previous life, where he met Isabella, his soulmate, knows the location of a book which will bring della Porta a power that can change the world or topple the order. Nick is detained, and Julie is desperate to save her husband and to stop della Porta in his tracks. The new life force of Paradise is a young artist, Carlo Zaccaro, who has become the new painter and warden of the damned, but Julia is unaware of this as she befriends him to rescue her husband. All the while, Nick is still entwined with his past life, and his struggles continue on many fronts. Rob Sanborn is simply a master at his craft. His story enchanted me with history, magic, art, adventure, and the characters were absolutely captivating. He has a talent as equal to or even surpasses that of Dan Brown, the author. The literary visuals that he creates in his stories is worthy of a major screenplay production, generating excitement and intrigue from the first page to the last page. If you like action-packed tales of adventure and an interesting blend of history thrown in, you're going to love this one. For everything I mentioned above, this is a must-read. And now it is our pleasure for the second time to welcome back Rob Sanborn to the Writer's Lounge broadcast. And I'm going to open the door same way I did for Terry and bring Rob here through the magic of radio, probably all the way from, I believe, Colorado. So he makes his way right here now. And hello, Rob. How are you?
Hello, Tom. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. And welcome back.
Okay, fantastic. Yes. So first of all, hi, Tom and Terry. It's so great to speak with you both. Thank you very much for having me back on your show.
Yeah, well, we're excited to have you.
It's a pleasure to have you back. We loved the first time around, and this time I'm sure will be just as exciting and thrilling. So for those who didn't listen to your first interview on the Writer's Lounge, tell us about yourself, and when did you become interested in being a writer?
Sure. And before I do that, though, I also want to thank you, Tom, for that amazing review and all of your kind words. I'm very flattered. They really blow me away. And yes, I am in Colorado, by the way. I'm in Denver. So a little bit about myself. So again, my name is Rob Sanborn. I am the author of the first book, which is called The Prisoner of Paradise, and the second book, which is called Painter of the Damned. And I also have a spinoff novella called The Swordsman of Venice. And
ooh.
I'm originally from New York City. But I do live in Denver now after living in L.A. for about 20 years. I moved to Denver about 3 years ago. And in answer to your question, I've always been into writing. I think a lot of writers sort of have this answer where even as a kid, I was always into writing and creating stories and all that. And I was also always into film and TV. And I was not an English major, so I've also been into other stuff like business and international relations and things like that. So I was actually an international relations and a Japanese major in college, but the love of writing never left me. So after college, I decided to study screenwriting at kind of a collegiate or even professional level, and became a screenwriter for a little while in LA and pursued that for a bit. And then, but I always wanted to try my hand at writing books as well. And I actually, The Prisoner of Paradise, which is the first book, I actually wrote as a script originally. And that script was optioned by a company that was founded by DreamWorks executives. And the movie was never made, but when the rights reverted back to me, I decided to adapt it into a book. And I'm really glad I did, because it just grew organically. Originally, I was planning on only writing it as a standalone, but it did grow into a series. So that is kind of my writing journey.
Yes. And
go ahead, Tom. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was just really excited to hear the spinoff here. And when did that occur? When did that happen?
Yeah, I kind of released that under the radar. So the spinoff book is called The Swordsman of Venice, and it's a 150-page novella. And I think it's a great entry into the series as well. So for the audience members who are not familiar with this series, it's a dual timeline thriller. Tom was kind enough to read the synopsis of the second book, Painter of the Damned. But for the whole series, as I mentioned, it's a dual timeline thriller, and it takes place in the present day and also the 16th century. And it does follow this American couple who travels to Venice, and they get caught up with this ancient religious order dating back to the 16th century. And the main character also has past life regressions back to the 16th century. And the nice thing about writing two different timelines is that I can pick up the story at different times and even in the middle. So The Swordsman of Venice actually follows the journey of the main character from the 16th century, who is Nick's past life. I don't think I'm really giving away too much with that. Because, so you may recall from The Prisoner of Paradise, it actually opens up in the 16th century with this character. His name is Angelo Mascari. It's at night in like this really dark area of Venice, and he's meeting with this kind of shady character. We don't really know what's going on, and they get attacked by these men. The other character, who's this nobleman, actually kills himself rather than getting captured. And then while arrows are flying around, Angelo escapes and just basically rows away from the city into darkness. And then all the other scenes in the 16th century are told prior to that, out of order. And so we never actually find out what happens to Angela. But this series, The Swordsman of Venice, which is the spinoff series, follows his journey as he leaves, with people pursuing him, and it's actually pretty cool. It's a lot of fun.
Very nice. Terry, did I stumble over you there? Go ahead. What were you going to say?
Yeah, no. What I was thinking was, one of my questions had been, you know, did you always know it was a three-book series? And you answered that in your intro there. So when did you know that it was going to be a three-book series? I'm just curious, at what point did you recognize that The Prisoner of Paradise wasn't going to stop and that there needed to be more?
That's a great question, Terry. And I need to think back on that exactly when it happened. I think it was probably towards the end of the first draft when I realized that it was, you know, it was the characters who wanted to continue the story, those who survived, but didn't kill. But, you know, the characters, a lot of them, especially the antagonists, did not want to stop the tale. There was more, you know, there was more that they wanted to do, and because there was more that they wanted to do, they needed to bring in the main characters back into it.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love how characters sometimes dictate what's going on. You know, I've many times, you know, tried to start out with, you know, an outline of some kind, and inevitably my characters don't like my outline and want to do something else, and they're dictating the whole story from start to finish, you know, and it's like, okay, I get it.
Exactly. And I think in this case it came about because of a subplot that I have. So Tom mentioned the antagonist, his name is Salvatore Della Porta. And I have a subplot where he actually is looking for this book that's about 450 years old that holds the key to tremendous power. And he believes that Nick knows about it because Nick's past life was tasked to find this book. So this is sort of like the whole thing that drives the entire story. And Della Porta continues, he still wants to find this book, and he knows that he needs Nick for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the Prisoner of Paradise was your first novel, and I'm really curious to know, after you left us, after that was released and published, how has the marketing been going for you in getting your stories out there? And any advice you can give from that experience?
Yeah, that's a great question as well, Tom. I think the marketing has gone very well. And for a debut book, I think that The Prisoner of Paradise is pretty successful, actually. So on Amazon, it did hit number one a couple times in some of its categories, and it's consistently done fairly well, I would say. And a lot of that I would attribute to the marketing. So I do have a publisher, Touchpoint Press, who I have a three-book deal with, but there's a lot, you know, they're an independent publisher, and I think as a lot of authors know, unless you're with a Big Five or one of the Amazon imprints, you're basically, and even if you are a big author, by the way, you're doing a huge amount of the marketing. And in my case, it's honestly probably like 99.5%.
Yes.
So I'm lucky enough to have a sales and marketing background. So I've been applying what I know to my, you know, marketing my books. So, but what I will tell people in terms of like advice is like, and this is something I did not know ahead of time, especially coming from a screenwriting world where you don't have to do this at all, but be prepared for this to be a full-time job. You know, you need to spend a lot of time marketing, especially in the beginning, you know, building your brand, focusing on brand awareness and brand recognition. And it is a huge time suck. You know, it's funny that you guys were talking about NaNoWriMo, and it's like,
yeah,
I feel like I'm in a, like, national writing year, like, constantly doing it. But the other thing about, like, trying to squeeze in 50,000 words into a month while trying to do all the marketing is impossible for one person, I think.
So
you,
in the
you
course
need to hire
of your,
somebody.
Rob, in the course of your day, just to get a better perspective on this, how much time and hours during a day would you say that you spend on marketing, and what does that entail? I know you put out a couple of trailer-like advertisements about your books. You know, what's that entail?
Yeah, I do have a number of videos. I would say, honestly, I'm going to lump in all the non-writing stuff. So besides just marketing, also like answering emails, responding on posts on Instagram or Facebook or anything like that, where it might go into marketing, but things like that, it's got to be pushing about an hour and a half to 2 hours a day. And yeah, like, you know, I make all my videos and all the graphics and everything like that. So it takes time, and I have a day job too. Fortunately, in all my research and going back to the 16th century and like with this ancient order, and you know, there's a lot that has to do with in the background of like how this order came to be and how they were able to extract souls from people's bodies and imprison them into paintings. They actually research a lot of like clockmaking and things like that. So I was actually able to figure out the secret of a 28-hour day. So I do get those extra 5 hours, but then that actually affects my math skills. So I'm just kidding.
I want those extra hours, okay? I think Terry is taking some notes right now, right, Terry?
Yeah, no, I am. I'm trying. You know, my second book is coming out in January, and so I'm pushing the marketing too. And when I got started, you know, unlike you, I had no marketing background whatsoever. I knew nothing. And I put my first book out, and I sat back and wondered why it wasn't selling. And,
right.
You know, it had a real quick lesson in what marketing was and just started going for it. And, you know, despite the fact that I was late getting it started and didn't know anything about anything, you know, I feel like as a debut, mine did really well. But with the second one, I'm doing a lot of things up front that I didn't know to do the first time. So, yeah, marketing is definitely a huge portion. If you want to be an author and you want people to know that your books exist, you've got to market it. And I don't know of too many people who are successful if they're not doing the marketing themselves, at least in the beginning.
At least in the beginning, right. Or hiring someone to do it.
Yeah, maybe once you get famous enough that people kind of know who you are, then maybe it's a little easier. But I'm not even sure that hiring someone would do as well, because there's so much of it that's about who you are.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just about your book.
Yeah.
It's about who you are. You know, who is Rob as an author? Who is Terry as an author? Who is Tom as an author? And having someone else answer those questions isn't nearly as effective as answering them yourself. So
I completely agree. Yeah, I agree with all of that. You know, going back to your question, Tom, about advice for writers is, you know, A, prepare for this to be a full-time job. And to Terry's point, you know, do as much as you can ahead of time. It's way better to delay your release and get everything out there, get all your ducks in a row, build buzz and, you know, everything that you can do ahead of time, because there's going to be so much more once the book is out.
Absolutely. Terry, you got the next question.
All righty. Let's see. We've kind of gone out of order here. So, Rob, when you first got started, you know, being the author, has anything really changed for you in terms of what you think is going to make you a successful author? Like, what did you think before, and what do you think now?
That's a great question as well. So I think there's two parts to that answer. You know, it's like, what has changed and what was I thinking ahead of time? So before the release, I think, like a lot of budding authors, you know, my expectations were probably off. You know, I think a lot of people kind of think like, yeah, you know, you write the book, it's great, you push it out, and it's going to be this huge bestseller.
Yeah.
I didn't think that, but I was thinking that maybe it was a possibility, and, you know, it has, I think, done fairly well for debut. But I think that my expectations have been tempered. I think my knowledge, and a lot of this has also just come from experience in a very, very short time. We're talking about a year. But my experience of dealing with the publishing industry and also meeting so many other authors and just like completely immersing myself in it. So on the marketing side, I think that I've learned a ton. You know, it's like there is a very big element of sink or swim, I think, in this business. You know, if you don't learn how to swim very, very quickly, you are going right down and you're going to be eaten by the sharks. So you do need, but at the same time, you're actually kind of in this lifeboat, you know, by yourself in this huge storm with a whole bunch of other lifeboats, and everyone else is by themselves too. And it's just like, you have to kind of navigate it, but like, people do link their lifeboats up together. And I think that the writing community is incredibly supportive. Everybody I know who's a writer is more than willing to share and impart their knowledge and, you know, sorry to use all these nautical analogies, but a rising tide lifts all ships. And then the other part of it is, I think my craft has improved considerably. So, you know, going back to the whole NaNoWriMo thing and about time, and you guys were also talking about like quality over quantity. And I am actually a big believer in, you know, getting this kind of like vomit draft out, but as fast as possible, and then go back and edit it. But I think that my skills a writer has improved considerably, that I can actually put out what is a decent vomit draft. I like to call it the vomit draft. And I think
that's,
you know, like,
so that's funny, because I call it word vomit. So I think I'm the same thing.
Yes.
I always say that it's just a big word vomit. You get the idea out there. And I agree with you.
Yeah.
My word vomits are getting better.
Right.
You know,
Yeah, and I look back on my first draft of my first book and just cringe. But now I know that my my vomit draft now is probably as good as like my 10th draft of the previous book, if not even better, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and not to get so graphic, but is it regular vomit or is it projectile vomiting that happens? Because I think sometimes it's good to, just really let it go and hurl it out there.
Yeah.
And, that can be a mess, but, it's very, very good advice. And I think, too, we all get caught up in, these wannabe writers, and I have friends that tell me, well, you're going to write a book, and I said, I've already written a book, and they say, well, how come I don't see it on the New York Times list? Or they have no idea what it is and what to expect. And sometimes, we're not going to end up being a Stephen King. We may end up being a lot less than that. But I think it's important to know that in order to be successful, you have to enjoy what you're doing, creating the story and putting it on the page. Because if you meet that level, I think anything that comes after that will be like icing on the cake. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, for sure. I think that everybody, there's very, very, very few authors as a debut who hit it big. You have to temper expectations. But the flip side to that, going back to what you're saying with, why don't I see your name on the New York Times bestseller list? It's like, there are tons of authors who are not on the New York Times bestseller list who are doing extraordinarily well. They might have found their niche in a particular genre and have written dozens of books and you've never heard of them, but they have a very, very loyal fan base.
And as we mentioned last show, Terry and I talked about the New York Times bestseller list, and we were surprised to find out that it's not all that it's cracked up to be, right, Terry?
Yeah, well, what is on the bestseller list isn't necessarily those books that have sold the most. There's a formula that they use, and a lot of it is even, based on opinion. And so, yeah, it's kind of crazy. Everyone, of course, I would never turn down being on the New York Times bestseller list. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
But I don't think that it's the only thing that makes you a good author. I mean, there's a lot of different ways that you can choose to determine whether or not you're successful. And the New York Times bestseller list is one small one. There are a lot of other ways to be successful. So
yes.
Yeah, exactly. And obviously I would never turn it down either. It's a huge honor. And if you are on, you're obviously doing pretty well. But they only accept books published by the big five publishers. So my books are not even eligible. Yeah.
Well, and not only that, but for a long time, now recently that's changed, but for a long time, it had to be a hardback. If you didn't sell it in a hardback, they didn't put it on their list. Now they do. Now they have a paperback list as well, but for a long time, they didn't even have that. So there were a lot of barriers to being on that bestseller list.
Yeah. So if anybody from the New York Times is listening to our show tonight, I would encourage you to listen to what Rob is saying, because we'd love to get him on the bestseller list. And also Terry, and maybe the third one would be me, but I got a long way to go. So Rob, let's talk about screenwriting. As you had alluded to, you are a screenwriter. As a screenwriter, what are the challenges and differences between writing a novel as opposed to writing for the screen? And what is the process of getting a story to the screen from the first step to the last? That's pretty involved here is the next question to you.
Yeah, good questions. And I would say, so for the first part of that question, the biggest challenge with book writing compared to screenwriting, I would say there's two. Before I answer that, I often use the analogy of like playing the same song on two different instruments, if it's the same story. Whereas with a screenplay, it's maybe you're playing a song on like the drums or something like that. And no disrespect to the drums, but with a book, you are playing it on like the pipe organ or whatever the most complex instrument you can think of is. But you would recognize the song, right, on either one, probably. And so, you know, with books, the two biggest challenges compared to writing a script, which has its own challenges and unique nuances and everything like that, I would say are one, internal dialogue and things like nonverbal cues and thoughts and all that stuff that cannot be filmed. And then the other thing is also grammar and sentence structure and everything that needs to be absolutely perfect. You know, with the script, you can get away oftentimes with a one-word sentence, actually, jumps or whatever. It's actually closer to poetry than it is to prose. So, again, screenwriting does have its own challenges and everything, but every single sentence does not need to be perfect. Now, some of the challenges with scripts is time, for example. You are definitely beholden to having it, you know, within a very, very specific number of pages, depending upon the genre. I mean, books are like that, too, but you have way more leeway. So things like that. So they both have their unique challenges. In fact, right now I am adapting a book into a screenplay. It's not a book that I wrote. I was hired by a wonderful author named Laura Kemp. Her book is called Evening in the Yellow Wood, and it's like a multi-genre kind of paranormal book that's fantastic that takes place in northern Michigan, and I am adapting that into a script. And there's a lot of challenges. You know, I'm trying to condense, I think the book takes place over like 3 months into a script that takes place over like 3 days, and making sure that it's, you know, for this particular genre, the target was probably about 112 to 115 pages. So you have to cut a lot, combine characters, do all these different things. It's not easy. And then, Tom, in answer to your second part of the question, what the process is, you know, it really depends upon where you are. But generally speaking, and when I say where you are, I mean like where you are in your career as a screenwriter, or what the project is that you're working on. But if it's a spec script, let's say, you know, if you're working on a script on speculation, you basically need to write it, perfect it, and similar to with books, you know, it needs to be as amazing as possible, you know. Good and great and really good and really great. Don't cut it. It needs to be absolutely incredible when you look at the numbers. And then once it's ready, typically most people send it out for what's called coverage, which actually is not a thing that exists in publishing as far as I know. But there are these firms in Hollywood that basically review your scripts as a studio would. And they review it and they basically grade it. And if you get, and there's essentially, there's different levels of these grades, but it's basically kind of like pass, recommend, or consider, with consider being in the middle, sorry. And only when it's really getting a recommend should you send it out. And you can send it out either to studios, production companies, agents, or managers. And then from there, depending upon who that is, if they like it, they'll either option it. And I have been lucky enough to actually have 5 scripts optioned. And from there, they'll try to set it up, get financing, and make the movie and all that, and buy it. And if you're lucky enough, your script will get bought, but that does not mean that it will get made. But then hopefully it will get made. So that's
right.
A very, wow. Very long answer.
Wow. Yeah, that's I would imagine that it's a lot more steps than you're dealing with when you're writing a novel. There's a lot more to it. And I was kind of looking at the end result. There would also have to be they have to hire actors to come in to read the script and to see if the actors would actually want to do it. I mean, that's a long process. Then you get
that's when it goes into production. Yeah,
right,
sorry to interrupt
right.
you, but yeah, that's when it goes into production. I'm not even counting that, actually. So what I kind of ended at the green light. So, you know, you sell your script and
right,
it gets made,
right,
it gets the green light.
Right.
But even then, sometimes it gets so that's typically the process. And, of course, there's a similar process for TV and things like that, but TV has its own track. So there are probably more steps than getting your book published. However, big, big, big however, especially if you go to the traditional route of publishing, is screenwriting is way faster, like way faster. You could write a script and have the movie made in basically the time it would take between querying an agent for books and having the publisher just giving you a contract. And then there's a whole other year on top of that before your book will get printed.
Wow. Wow. I think Terry's going to get to work on her screenplay really quick here with Sunflowers Beneath the Snow.
You know, that's the thing. Well, that's the thing with I look at it, and I don't know how to turn Sunflowers Beneath the Snow into a screenplay, because at least a third of my book is internal dialogue, and I don't even know what to – I wouldn't even know where to go with that. It's like I don't
right.
even know what that means.
Right, right, right.
So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
hey, Rob, I'm curious. You've got a third book in your series. How far are you into it in terms of writing it?
I'm about a third into it.
Okay. All right. And
yeah.
what are you going
to do? And
that's
set to come out. Oh.
Yeah, when's
sorry,
that going
to
come out? No. When will it come out?
That will come out probably in about a year. So I did
okay.
mention that it does take about a year typically for a publisher
right.
to put out a book from once they receive the draft. I am fortunate with this series that it's I kind of have the dates set already. So I you
oh,
know
that's
the,
great.
The,
yeah.
one of the really nice things about yeah after you know if you are with a publisher and you've debuted and you have an agent, which I do. There is a huge weight that is lifted from your shoulders where you're just like, I have it, like the dates all set up and like, you know, I have my publisher and all that. So I don't have to worry about all that.
Great.
I just
so
have to write it and send it off to
yeah,
the publisher's
what are you gonna, what are you going to do when you're done with your third one? What's next?
So first of all, yeah, that's a great question, Terry. So first of all, I mentioned that novella, and it's the spinoff
yeah.
that occurs in the 16th century. I'm going to write another one of those, so I'm going to continue that story. And then after
okay.
that, I do have a number of ideas of other books that I want to write. And I need to kind of figure out what – maybe I'll work with my agent on this, or maybe I'll talk to a bunch of people. But I really want to write to market. You know, I'm not shy about saying this. Like, I want to make money from this, and I have no
right.
problem with writing something that's going to sell more than, you know, compared to, like, writing, like, my passion project that's not going to sell that much, whatever. So because, you know, I want this to be a career, and I want to be very successful at it. So I have a number of different ideas for that. They probably will either be in my current genre, which is historical thriller, or butt up against that to some point.
Okay.
But, yeah, so basically I have all these different ideas, and I need to figure out which one's going to be the most marketable. And obviously there's no guarantee to that, but, you know, got to do it.
Right,
well,
right.
A lot going on in your head there, mister.
Yeah, tell me about it.
Yeah. So
I have a list
yeah.
of, honestly, probably like 60 different ideas.
Yeah, let's branch off into another area, which is you know, a whole different part of publishing these days, but your book is also in an audio format. What's that like, and how do you pick, or do you pick who reads your story?
Yeah, another great question. And I love having my book in audiobook format. I actually listen to audiobooks a lot, so it's pretty thrilling. And so my agents got the audiobook deal, and it's with my print publisher. So I have a three-book audiobook deal with a company called Tantor Media, which is a division of a larger audiobook publisher. I forgot the name off the top of my head. And in terms of narrator, so Tantor Media actually suggested one narrator for my book, the first book, and presumably for the series. And he was a fine reader, but he's an English gentleman who honestly I think would be better suited for, you know, something like Charles Dickens books or something like that. A great reader, but not right for my books. So I through my agent, actually got back to Tantor Media and said, hey, you know, I don't really think that he's the right person for it. And they were super cool. They said, that's no problem. You can actually choose a different narrator, but the narrator needs to be a narrator who works with Tantor Media. So I listened to probably like 15 or 20 different people. I narrowed it down to maybe five or so and sent it off. And I am still thrilled to this day that my top choice was picked. His name is Zach Alamon, and he is just phenomenal. And I can say that from a non-biased standpoint. So again, I listen to an audiobook at least once a month, and he's one of the best narrators I've heard. I absolutely love listening to my book from like a reader's perspective. He's just amazing. You know, there's so many different accents. You know, I have probably like, I don't know, probably 20 or 30 characters of speaking lines and all these different accents from different time periods, different genders, and he just nailed every single one.
Oh, my God.
So the Prisoner of Paradise audiobook is out, and actually the Painter of the Damned audiobook is coming out in just 2 weeks on November 29th. And I just
Fantastic.
From a reader's standpoint, yeah, I can't wait to listen to that.
Wow.
So he's doing all three. Which is cool.
That's crazy. And then to switch, accents and all that stuff to do what he's doing, that's a whole nother talent on his part. So
absolutely. It's like doing a one-man show.
Yeah. So you've been compared. I've been looking at your reviews here, and you've been compared to Dan Brown. Is that a fair comparison, and do you have a favorite movie in your genre?
I am a big fan of Dan Brown's, so I am more than happy with that comparison. I don't know if my writing style is the same as his, but, you know, in terms of plot, I suppose there are a number of comparisons, but it's not exactly the same. I think there are actually kind of like a lot of Dan Brown knockoffs out there, and I would not actually say my work is like that. And then in terms of movies, for his movies, my favorite of his is definitely Angels and Demons, which is also my favorite book of his. That's the one the movie actually came out after The Da Vinci Code, but the book came out before The Da Vinci Code. But I am a big fan of the historical thriller genre, you know, which is basically thrillers that either take place in the past or involve something of the past or bring in some form of history like that. And you could even say that Indiana Jones is kind of like that, which obviously I love those movies too. There's a lot that I like.
Wow. Terry?
Curious, in the last show with us, you mentioned that you do write with an outline, and that the ending is usually determined before you write. Have there been any like really big changes in the ending from like book one to two to book three, or has your outline stuck pretty much with the way you figured it was going to go?
So book one, the ending is completely different actually, but I'll get back to that. Book two and book three, I actually outlined together. Those endings are going to be the same as from the outline. That's a great question, though. So for book one, I actually originally outlined it and wrote it as a script, as I mentioned before. And then when I turned it into the book, the ending of the book of the first few drafts was the same as the ending of the script. And then when I got my agent, they actually didn't love the ending. One day I'll release the original ending. It's kind of like a deleted scene. And by the way, I probably wrote twice as many words as what the final draft is. But yes, the ending of the first book is pretty different. And then when I decided to convert it into a series, I had to make some changes as well to it. But the changes really kind of facilitated the subsequent books.
Right, right. I would think that if you decide you're going to write a series when you thought instead you were writing one book, you are going to have to leave some things open and allow a little more open-ended in some areas so that you can go on to book two.
Yeah, exactly. And actually, getting back to your previous question of what I'm going to do next, I am going to have some threads kind of out there in the event that I do want to continue this series so that I can pick it up
again. Oh, I agree. I think, you know, especially if the second book is going to do it, you know, your first book has done really well. Hopefully book two is going to do better than that. By the time you get to book three, people may be begging you for 4 and 5. So,
yeah,
that'd be nice.
Yeah. Rob, we're getting close to the end here. We got a little over 4 minutes left. And last time, of course, you're now an expert being on this show here. So you know all about the Oscar moment where we ask you to thank everybody in your life for your successes. go ahead and do that if you'd like around this time with this last installment of your series. And let us know where we can contact you.
Sure. Well, first of all, Tom and Terry, I want to thank you both for having me on the show, and thank you for the support and reading my book and for all the wonderful praise, Tom. And then, you know, I have to thank my family, my wife, Tiffany, and my daughter, Sienna, for putting up with me, you know, sitting in front of the computer and really taking away from a lot of family time. Definitely want to thank my agent, Amy Ashcraft, and Kimberly Brower as well from the Brower Literary and Management. And thank my publisher, Touchpoint Press. And in terms of where to find me, my website is robsanborn.com. So that's R-O-B-S-A-M, as in Mary, B as in boy, O-R-N.com. And I am on all social media platforms, usually Rob Sanborn. And my books are available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, in a bunch of stores around the country. But if they don't have it, all you have to do is ask and they can order it.
Very good. I can't wait to read the last one in the series. And I'm really interested in Soulmates. I didn't ask you a question about that, but I know you are too. So I'm intrigued about that question. Maybe we can have you on again sometime and you could talk to us about that. But thanks, Rob, for coming and sitting here with Terry and I, and best of luck to you.
Thank you, Tom. Terry, have a great night. It was wonderful speaking with you again.
Take care, Rob.
Okay.
Bye. And make sure I X'd out of the phone number because I almost turned Terry off here. So
did you almost cut me off, Tom?
I almost cut you off. So anyways, another fine interview with Rob. I'm glad he was on for the second time. And again, if you want to go and look for Rob out there, you want to look for Painter of the Damned by Rob Sanborn, and that's anywhere out there that sells books. And Terry, before we go, I wanted to ask you also to promote your last book or the book that's going to be published here very shortly. I want you to put in a plug for that, if you would.
Yeah, no, it's An Enemy Like Me. It is a World War II genre historical fiction, but it looks at the idea of what is an enemy, and it's based on a first-generation German-American who fights in World War II. He thinks he's going to fight the Japanese. He ends up in Germany fighting the Germans and recognizes that he is more like the enemy than he is different from the enemy. And so we follow his story from his point of view as a soldier, his wife who was left behind, and his four-year-old son. And then we also see it from his four-year-old son once he's grown up and he's looking back at his experiences.
Great, great. Can't wait to read that. And on November 28th, 2 weeks from tonight, author David Tuno will be here, and he wrote The Intrepid Spirit. I'm a lover of history and a good entertaining fictional tale. Intrepid Spirit delivered beyond what I could imagine. And also on November 28th, we will announce the 6 nominees for the Writers Lounge 2022 Bookshelf Awards. These will be posted on our Facebook page and announced on our broadcast. Until then, Terry and I will see you next time on the Writers Lounge, where we encourage writers and readers to keep the pen in the eyes to the page and to let the story begin. Enjoy yourselves and be well, and good night.
If they asked me, I could write a book about the way you walk and whisper and look. Secret of the plot. It's just to tell you that I love you a lot. Then the world discovers, as my book ends, how to make